Now, witness, I'm going to collect this in later. When you ask me.
Yeah, see, I have a lot of questions to fill in.
I'm trying to get my continuity.
Yeah, see, Helen, I have a lot of questions also like that that I want to fill in gaps, but I think it would confuse Mrs. Chan if we ask her, like, questions back and forth.
I'd be glad to. I have lots of them. I've read the your...
May I ask you the name of the woman?
Yeah, Los Angeles Chinese New Life.
So this is in the mid-30s now that you're talking about? The mid-1930s?
No, it was, yeah, the late 30s.
Late 30s.
Where was that?
Oh, so anyway, the club has been formed and you're in Pomona, but the...
Yeah, okay. I'll try to remember and do it as fast as I can. It was a time when there was a need for a solid women's club to be organized for the purpose of, you know, helping the local people and also the Chinese background people and the war efforts. In the beginning, the council at that time in Los Angeles was a T.K. Chang, Mr. T.K. Chang, who happened to be a classmate of my husband at Lingnan University when they were both students over there in China, Canton, China. So he sorted me out, so to say, and said, Lily, you got to help them because I have promoted 3-4 meetings, nothing come out of it. Then after I was convinced that I should go in and listen to what's going on, I was corralled into being the chairman of the president because of, they had a quick vote by the people who attended, you know, whoever, about 30 people attended only, the ladies. And they were so happy to have, maybe I was a little younger, maybe I looked a little stupid or something, and I just didn't know what I was getting into. But at that time, they said, well, Mrs. Leung Jiang has 2 votes less than you, and you got the most vote. I said, I want to switch with Mrs. Leung, and I'll help her because I have babies, you know. But Mrs. Leung said, no, there's a reason, a private reason, that I don't want to be the chairman, because if you do, then I'll come to the meeting. If you don't, then I won't come. And my mother had already told me before I came to Los Angeles years ago, that Mrs. Leung Jiang is one of the best educated Chinese women of her contemporary. She was educated in a very fine school, a Tatuda school, and she writes beautiful Chinese, and she's a Christian of the Methodist Church, whom Stanley Lau's mother knows knew very well, and the father too. Father, of course, you all know Stanley's father was a minister in Japan, where my husband was a student then, and they met there. And in fact, my husband told me that when Stanley was a little boy, a baby, he used to carry him down the stairs. You know, they lived in the same, and that he was a very handsome baby. But at that time, I didn't. Then I wasn't with him then. He was a student. My husband was one time in Japan.
Excuse me, were most of the people in the Women's Association, were they also like, similar to yourself, like educated and born in America, or?
No, there's some are educated in China. Well, the Chinese women are the group that the nuclear was mostly housewives. Nice people that have good children who became later professionals. Now, they are in their own right, according to their time, they're fine ladies. But they haven't got the training that I have or Mrs. S.K. Lau had. This is S.K. Lau, she's a little more my senior. Who is the father? The mother of our Mr. Lau here, Stanley. She was a nurse in her days. I'm just going out to describe the component parts of the club. She is one of the most enlightened ones, and she was our secretary. I was the treasurer. I mean, I was the president. And then we have another American born, Mrs. Jean, and a few Mrs. Edwin Chow. They were the first, more or less. American or English or more modernized group, more advanced in the sense of coming out to do civic work. Now, I can't qualify them, the background, they all have different backgrounds. Some of them have a business training, but they were all giving it this for the newly planned, organized Chinese Association Women's Club. So we had a hard time. The moment we were formulated to go ahead, the whole town was like, gee, this is a club. You should stop your wives from coming to the meeting because they're going to teach them how to get advanced and maybe they run away from home. And I didn't realize at the beginning as a student I always do these kind of activities. So finally, when I heard about that, I was patient enough to explain to the community, and a few of my friends did the same thing, that we are not for that purpose. We gave them the real purpose and objective of our club. Then the things a little bit more stable. And then each thing, every time we do something, we have to put in the Chinese paper, why we have a meeting, what for, and how the money's going to be spent, and so on and so forth. The same old thing that you would have to do as a young club that you're, when you're unknown. But anyway, we did have a very good response. The Chunghua Wigun was landed, given to us for meeting free, and we were just next door to the CACA in that old building where the firehouse now is, you know. One big building with a broken steps, you know, wooden steps, and then you go one side is the Chunghua Wigun, and the other side is the, CACA. But anyway, we coped with the situation. And another person who inspired me was the old engineer of the Chinatown, building up the Chinatown, Mr. Peter Suhu. You know the Suhu family, Barbara's uncle. And he said, Lily, if you don't come out, this will never come to pass. Take a little time to come out and help. And then when I looked at him, I said, well, if you say so, it's okay. So I patiently, you know, worked with them. Then the people, these are Chinese women that way. They're willing to give a few dollars. They said, Luna, you know, going and say, oh, you know, you do the work, I'll give you a few dollars. I'll give you $1, $3, and some of the better, you know, equipped. They would give $10. Then I get a foundation money. And Mrs. S.K. Lau, Stan's mother, was one of my drivers. Wherever I have to go someplace, she would come up from Glendale and pick me up, and we would go, and I would do the talking and convincing, or whatever you call the preaching, for them to want to help us with the war effort. First was for the Japanese war. Then later on, in the 1940s, when we joined the second the ally, you know, the Guadalupe. But then we had to help America doing the selling bonds and all. Again, they pinned me down to being the Chinese origin chairman. And each month we have to raise so many thousands of dollars. How am I going to raise it with two babies and a husband who's teaching? And I have no maid at home. But then I have all these nice people like Mrs. Lau and Mrs. Chow and a few others who would come and pick me up, and I drive to all the nice country clubs and ask them to buy more bonds, not to get money. Buy more bonds, keep on selling and yakking, and tell them to be sure to remember, you know, that it's for China and for America. We American Chinese, we got two heritages and so on and so forth. Anyway, the story was...
These bonds were from America or for China?
Yeah. The club?
No, the bonds.
For American, U.S.
They were U.S.
War bonds. From the Second World War to the Victory Loan bond, I was the chairman for the Southern California War Financing Committee for the Chinese origin group. Nobody knew about it. I just worked at home. And then I got all these fine drivers here to help me. Now you can do work by delegating and or also writing telegramming instead of moving around. So the only time I get out in the community is to program things, like pageantry, you know, and Deng Long Tu and all kinds of things, you know, and the AWVS, getting the girls to wear their uniform to show off, and sell bonds. I got some pictures someday I'm going to reproduce. Maybe I'll give them all to you.
The people who bought the bonds, were they relatively more well-to-do Chinese, or
no,
were they the people who worked in restaurants?
Oh, I'm telling you, the people who work in restaurants should get a star. They are the ones that are more patriotic, some of the wealthy people, as far as my experience is concerned. They would do what they can. I could go around for Red Cross collection, March of Dimes, Hong Gai Mo, which is community chess, eventually became United. I was in every one of those things for the Chinese people. But I would say I have already solicited so much from this group here. Where am I going to do? Laundry. Okay, one day laundry. Second day, what you call a grocery store. And then the next time, a restaurant. Restaurant owner and a restaurant worker, you know. The second cook, third cook, you know, they give you $1, $2, and you take it with, you know, kind of a skepticism, but you have to take it because you have to make the quota. I'm telling you, the Chinese, let me emphasize, the Chinese people, no matter what station they work during the time that I was active, they were not just the coolie type. They were people who had something background when they came over here, either forced by the war or by economic reason. They had the background. They were students in a village teachers in the village, and they were not all coolies, you know, as some American portray us, you know, that because they work in a restaurant or Tongsan, you know, before they have the machinery, they used to iron one by one. I see them taking iron from each other until the time when I went to the latter part of my solicitation. They were using these things, you know, electric ironer, you know, to put the sleeves in and everything. I saw all those things as they evolved, you know, developed. So you folks are much more fortunate because you're born later. But these people are fine people. The Chinese have a lot to give, have given a lot. And only if only people like you would really go into it and bring it out and let the American simple-minded people know that the Chinese are still giving now. With our education today, we're doing more. But at that time, they were doing something. I saw it. I said, these are nice people. They're sad because they have to go in their kitchen and do this kind of work, you know, for permanently. And I have a poet working in a grocery store, sorting out a vegetable who died not long ago, Chen Zhendong, you know. He can write poetry, but he has to sort out and work with the town family, you know, to sort out vegetables until his hands were cut, you know, with cold, you know, what you call, winter, you know, sores, you know.
Well, but since you're talking already about the Chinese in Los Angeles right around
right.
Maybe you could give us a general idea. There were still about 5,000 at that time?
At that time, there were approximately, of course the census was not very clear, but it was rumored that there were only 5,000 Chinese at that time in the 30s.
And what kinds of jobs were most of them taking?
Mostly laundry and grocery store, small chop suey places, and of course housework, and some of them even vendors. Selling vegetables up and down the street, trying to make, you know, the rich family buy, you know, different types of vegetables and fruit from them.
This is outside of China.
Yeah, they go to these wealthier homes, you know.
And agriculture?
Pardon?
Agriculture.
Oh yes, farming naturally. Of course, when they're farming, they don't have the large scale farming until the Japanese war. Then they took over the larger farms and become. They used to farm, you know, in a small scale. A nursery too, planting flowers, dry flowers and things like that. And
about how much money do you think that they've made in this kind of job? I mean, like, I know it's less in those days than it is now.
Less than $150. Less than $150 per month.
Per month.
$90, $75, $100, $150. Everybody just fly to that, try to capture that job. If you get $200 in a government place, you're wealthy. If you get $500, you're a super, you see.
And
so that's the way they live.
Was the pay about the same for like laundry and restaurant, or was there some that paid more than others?
Well, they pay about the same. I would say average 15, 16 to less than $20 per week. And how many hours? From 8 to 10 hours a day. And sometimes if they live around there, they work, you know, all around the clock, see. But those who own their laundry and do their own job, of course they get the profit from the trade.
Did a lot of people own their own laundries?
Yes, small ones. Everybody have a small space. They would have a laundry, a machine, you know, a few irons, and if a hot, the old-fashioned iron that had the kind you find in the old station, you know, railroad station. And they stick to these tong dao, you know, one by one around this thing with a tray. And when it's cold after the user, they have to have a pad. And they put it back there, and it bring out the other one. And as I told you, gradually the machinery, first for the collar, and then for the sleeves, and then for the body, you know, of the shirt. So that was hard enough. The latter type of performance was already very difficult, you know, it caused you to sweat a lot. But then those were the days when I first, in the 30s, you know, that they have to make a living. And these children, coming from these families, they usually have a difficult time. They don't get scholarship grant because their English isn't that strong. So, you know, the parents would just have to tighten their belts, you know, put them through. I must say, now it's it's a luxury now, but at that time, they say, So that's the way the parents of the Chinese were in the 30s. A few of, excuse me.
These are small shops and laundry shops.
One store space.
And one store, they family business, or they hire some of the people, women's, or?
Once in a while they have a relative who came from China, would cope with the life there, and a nephew or uncle or some sort of immediate relative, they would stay with. But how do they live? They live with a curtain over a partition, and the middle part they have a cavity there, they hang a kitchen, cloth, a curtain, and then they cook inside, and inside there's a big room, and then maybe it's another curtain to separate the bed from the kitchen part. There's always a table in the middle where they do everything. All of them are similar. Some of them a little deeper, some of them are wider, but most of them are one story space according to their ability to pay the rental for the, you know, for the space.
About how much would a place like that cost to rent?
At that time, I think $50, $60, or $70, you know.
So what would a typical family's monthly expenditure be? Because, like, you said they're making about $100, $150 a month.
Yeah, that would be about under $100. Yeah. They have to be.
But then the rent takes up half of that already.
Yes.
So
and
then
no clothes. No, they don't draw on the clothing. See, they just wear their sweat shirt, whatever. They don't dress up very much. They just don't dress up. That's all. And
so the rest of the money goes to food.
Food, rental,
mm-hmm.
and the children's education. They always say to me, Mrs. Chan, I don't have an education myself, but I like to have my son, my daughter, the son first. The daughters were not mentioned at that time. My children. My son to get a good education. I'm saving. He goes to school, you know, and he goes to school. Someday he won't have to work like me. That's always the same comment.
So did most people have any money left to save, or do you think they
have
to spend?
They still save.
They still mm-hmm. save.
They save penny a day or a dime a day. They save maybe 20 years or 15 years. They save maybe that's a good season. They save, and then they would, as you say, many of them. Not all of them. Many of them would save $500. That was a lot of money. Save $500, they buy a passage, and they go back to the village, and they put in some money and build a little home. A community church. And usually they die there. They like to die there and buy their own.
This
you know.
Is after they lived the life here? They wanted to go back there to retire?
Yes, because the prejudice, you know, the discrimination, and the lack of ability to mingle with the mainstream caused them to think of their home back there. This is just a transient, you know, trip you know, over to like you're going to Africa as an engineer for 5 years, you're coming home to Los Angeles. Same thing. Only theirs is a longer duration, decades of that.
So that means that most of the people who were here were Tsoka. They weren't Tsoksing then, because if they're still thinking of doing
No, they're not Tsoksing. Their children might become Tsoksing, and they're going to call it, you know, the nickname. Which is Tosang, they think that they're not thinking because they're not Chinese enough, you know. So
most of the adults would still prefer to go back to
Many, but not all of them. Some of them, maybe their family back there are gone, you know, they have no reason. But some of them have their mother, father, grandfolk. If they have some family ties over there, they would like to go. At least they go back to visit them and spend the money and then come back again or leave behind in their home village some benefit. You know, Gundingan, you know, to contribute some to the community welfare, or build a little home, a shack or something, a hut, where they can call it their home, see? And then they come back and work another 10 years. But then the second time when they go back, I'm sure that they're ready, they expect to rest there forever, you know.
These people, when they go back, do they record into the family book, you know?
Yeah, over there. Yes, they have. They're very stringent about that. See, one generation has a certain term, a word. If you know, for example, I think sin mat, everybody from that is sin, huh? Heng mat, from before, you know. Mm-hmm. So you can identify yourself as a link. So you go back to your village, you say, well, my father was heng somebody. Then they say, oh, you're the son. Then you belong to the next word, you know. Mm-hmm. So the Chinese may not be very good inviting figure, but they have a scheme whereby they carry on the continuity.